You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
The Vox Markets Podcast.
Welcome to Taking Stock. It is a Tuesday, and the date is the 15th of August, 2023. I said it slowly because I've forgotten myself. And I'm joined by Cashmere John, but today he's gone with it's a beach smart, city casual, I think. That's the way it's a very nice little beach. The sun's out, John. It's looking nice, and you're looking dressed up there.
It's nice. It's nice weather. Take advantage of it while we can.
Yeah. Lots happening, lots of news out today, I thought. We'll cover some of this, but wages have gone up. The price of milk has come down. That's essential. That's what the Bank of England look at. Milk. Obsessed with it. I saw Michael Burry short in the market. China cutting the cost of borrowing. And tomorrow, of course, that all-important UK inflation figure, which is, of course, the Bank of England look at that when determining policy. So we'll look at that. By all means, hit that subscribe button. Next week, I think we're taking a week off. And if we haven't got many more subscribers, we'll just quit this. So, John, did anything you caught your eye? I noticed you did post out, I think, SEC filings, aren't they? This is where people discovered that Michael Burry, of course, famous for The Big Short, the film, excellent film, is sort of shorted the market massively, the NASDAQ and the S&P 500, and I think 1.6 billion worth. I put a survey up there saying he's obviously bearish. Where do you reckon the markets will be at the end of the year? John, what's your thoughts on it?
I'm erring on the side of bearishness, as we talked about yesterday, but I mean, this is a bold bet, a very, very bold bet indeed. And you know, you might look at it and say, well, Michael Burry, he called it right before. is he going to do so again? But then I've seen other criticism saying, you know, Michael Burry has called 50 of the last two recessions, you know, downturns correctly.
Yeah, He's not the actual genius. I mean, he did the mortgage market. Yeah, a mortgage market. Sometimes you only have to make one big bet in life, and if it pays off, you do well. And he did that with the mortgage market, of course, which is a very rare occurrence. He got it right, but he has got many things wrong. And if you read that article, I think it was on Reuters. He shifts his portfolio around quite a lot. It's more of a trader rather than, you know, a full-on conviction play and stick with it. Sometimes he comes off very quickly if he doesn't feel right. It's in historic filing, so we don't know what his positions are now. It could have taken a bit off, but...
He's a smart guy. I mean, you know, you shouldn't discount what he says and does.
Yeah.
I would pay attention. You know, whilst I perhaps wouldn't go out on a limb in such a way. I mean, you know, what's he bet against? He's bet against the NASDAQ. He's bet against, you know, the S&P. And we know that, you know, sort of big tech, they dominate those indices. So I'm assuming that this is really a bet against big tech.
Exactly. There isn't a lot, you know. I mean, if you look at the NASDAQ here, this is the NASDAQ. And, you know, that's all-time high up there. And if you scroll out, that was a massive rise. And so even though we had this sell-off, this bear market, it hasn't really come down a lot. from where we are at all-time highs. So
the
economy is not firing on all 6 to 8, 12 cylinders, whatever it is. So you could say, let's be honest, this has a bit of a relief rally of the Fed sort of getting towards peak interest rates, terminal rate there. So, and maybe that's what it is. And like you said, it's the big tech mainly. I think they make up now, well, 7 big companies that are rallying make up 50% of the S&P 500, which is huge. So the rest of the S&P maybe not doing so well. So all you need is one or two of those big stocks to roll over, pretty much, and they will affect the S&P, especially Apple. And in fact, you just posted something there, and it was Warren Buffett through SEC filings as well. Holds a big chunk of Apple, doesn't he?
I mean, it's worked over the years. I mean, you look at Apple share price, you know, that has been really a one-way ticket upwards from, you know, less than $20 a share to nearly $200 at its peak. You know, and that's in pretty quick time. So it's been a good bet. Apple, I mean, you know, look back and, you know, I remember tipping this at the Investors Chronicle, tipping it, incidentally. I wrote
Well, that's what made it rise, John. Your
absolutely.
I tipped it wouldn't have gone anywhere unless you tipped that.
So I submitted the tip on a Thursday or Wednesday, the day we used to go to press, and the following day, Steve Jobs died. So that's indeed the only obituary I've ever written. But you know, since, I mean, the shares, you know, they were cheap at the time. You know, Apple was very, very cheap. I don't think anyone had quite understood, you know, quite how powerful the brand was at that point. And obviously then there was a change of leadership I can't remember his name.
Tim Cook
came in. My memory's going. And the shares have just, you know, it's been gangbusters ever since. So good bet by Buffett.
Yeah. Well, honestly, Steve Jobs was the entrepreneur and the visionary that was quite, but you think the running of a business, Tim Cook's obviously done very well, just, you know, slow iterations, not anything crazy. He's not the pioneer that obviously Steve Jobs is, but for day-to-day business running and keep it sensible and consistent, he's the man, isn't he? So,
precisely. The numbers though, the other day didn't look great. If you look at that share price graph, you've got, you know, quite a steep drop-off the wake of those. You know, Apple shares are far from cheap now. You're talking sort of 30 times earnings, forecast earnings. And it's much the same story across big tech. You know, Amazon's even more highly rated, but then it churns a lot of its profits, or would-be profits, back into investing. You know, Nvidia, 55 times forecast earnings, you know.
Wow.
These are highly rated companies. And, you know, let us never forget that fundamentally tech companies are cyclical. You know, if they're exposed to advertising, if they're exposed to consumer spending, they are cyclical. Corporate spending, cyclical. I mean, you know, I would heed this bet by Michael Burry. And I would also, you know, then look at Berkshire's shareholdings and, you know, just see what Buffett does with Apple.
Yeah, 51%, isn't he, of Apple? That's just the portfolio. He's got a lot of companies in there, but 51% Apple is quite a big chunk. He does talk about, you know, diversification. I think I don't know if he made that up, but you know, talk about having too many stocks. But if you look at his, he does hold a lot of stocks, you know. But I said 50% is in Apple, so that's not 51%. So that's a big chunk.
It's a funny old portfolio. Most of Berkshire Hathaway is invested in companies owned by Berkshire Hathaway. So,
Let's go to Matthew. Well done, fella. Well done. First to comment. Thank you very much, Matthew. And by all means, listen, comment below. End of year, the market. I mean, generally, sort of maybe FTSE 100, 250, whatever, or even name. Let us know, higher or lower. So we need to type higher or lower. Where do you see it going? John, do you think it's going to be lower or?
Lower.
I think it's going to be higher. I think we're going to get better in the UK, because I think the UK is cheap. I don't think the S&P and NASDAQ will be particularly, but we're still lagging the US sort of inflation data. And so I think it's going to, in fact, what's it forecast coming out? I think it's 6 point, what is it? 6 points. Let's sort of scroll down a sec. It's 6.8 CPI is forecast coming tomorrow. That's down from 7.9. So it's coming down to fair rate, considering it's up to over 11% at one point. So, but we'll see. So anyway, Matthew says, another boring company, but a steal. Be careful in the shops, stealing cards. But Card Factory, but when did you get into this? Because it's been running for a while. This one, we did cover Card Factory a while back.
We did.
I never got the lows at 30 pence, but lots at 50 and 60 have added last results at £1.02. So let's look at the Card Factory chart here. Click it up here, it's a share screen. Yeah, a cracking run. And we talked about this saying, when retailers generally, are tarred with the bad sentiment and this, this one performing well, that's an opportunity. Sooner or later, the market catches on to the fundamentals. And it'll re-rate. And something. But I would say it's quite good, but it needs to get above that previous high there, I would say. Otherwise, it's coming back down to retest this sort of area here at 80 pence level. But
It's nice company. Yeah, and I think, as we discussed last week, there is the sort of last man standing argument here as well. Clinton's retrenching, and it's historically been a difficult market, but there's a bit of a turnaround story going on here, and it looks good.
Well, I would say this: the RSI there, the RSI peaked out at 78-80 pence. It hit high up here on that, pretty much, was like 112. Now it's struggling to get that high, and the RSI is sort of peaking out. So it may have to exhaust itself, go right, or consolidate for a bit. Mm. But there's a nice gap up there. May have to refill that gap. But Card Factory there.
Another kind of important retailer put some numbers out today. They put out a very brief statement.
Yeah, what was this? Marks and Spencer. Yeah, because that's almost people say it's a bellwether, I suppose. But when people have written Marks off for a while here, but we saw lows of 90 pence back in October. Another £2, again, a multi-bagger. Marks is a multi-bagger.
Large companies that aren't always boring and can do well for you, particularly when, as you say, they've been written off for dead and you get a new broom in there who comes and starts making changes that significantly alter the course of a company's performance. We know what's been going on. I mean, it's been a disaster zone for years, Marks and Spencer, particularly, in fact, mainly in its non-food business. Food has always been strong.
Have you seen that? Like food sales grew by 11%, and the like clothing and home sales grew by 6%. And they said there remain considerable uncertainties about the economic outlook, and there is a risk that the consumer market will tighten as the year progresses. Nevertheless,
they copied that of a Card Factory. I've literally just read that.
Haven't they?
It's exactly the same. There remains considerable. Yeah, it's it's awful. The outlook is, the consumer outlook is awful, but these numbers are good.
Yeah, they say profit growth and interim results to show significant, I always like the word significant, improvement against previous expectations. That's what's making them rise. So,
expectations for Marks and Spencer's non-food business have been very low for many years. And we know that they're sort of shutting, they're sort of shifting course. So they've shut a lot, or they have shut, or in the process of shutting a lot of their high street shops. Certainly the non-food side of things, moving into sort of bigger box retail, which seems to be the route that many are taking, and it seems to be working. The problem with Marks and Spencer, I heard an analyst once describe Marks and Spencer as a sea of trousers, and it's true that you walked into it and it's just a ungodly awful shopping experience.
That some people of a certain age love it. It's always been a stalwart, pretty much, for a certain age, isn't it?
That's true. This is something I've always tried to work out. So,
most of those people are dead now, though.
So well, this is the question. This is the question. Mm. So, do you get to a certain age and start shopping in Marks and Spencer's, or does Marks and Spencer's have to start catering for people who are younger and therefore change itself as they get to that certain age? It's funny. Do you start buying brown jumpers when you reach the age of 60?
Yeah, well, yes, I got a brown shirt coming in the post tomorrow now. Not for Marks and Spencer, though. But do you know what? The funny thing is, I suppose as you get older, your tastes change anyway. So Marks going along, they're catering to that demographic in a good way. I mean, there's not many people who get, apart from yourself there, Don, with your beach shirt, who get very trendy in their sort of 50s, I suppose. They start going the other way. You want more sensible clothes, don't you?
My question. That's my question.
Jedi, a P6 Jedi, says, higher, he reckons the market's going. Steve A, higher, he reckons the market's going. Old Dog, I replied to your request on Twitter this morning. RNS, have a look at EBDX. We're going to cover those anyway because they are one of the most read. Don't know if you've seen this yet. It's Abingdon, of course. Let's look at that. It's basically EBDX. They've done a deal with, haven't they, Tesco. I think it's these.
We got one with Superdrug already, but the news this morning was Tesco. Yeah. That's right.
It's called a Salistic, and of course, that's short for saliva stick. This is a spit stick. Just call it that. Spit stick would be better. Nice.
Yeah.
More classy. But they say the launch of Salistic is for saliva pregnancy tests in 298 stores online at Tesco from late August and online as well. But it says to me, 12.5 million pregnancies were performed in the UK in 20. So I don't know what part of the market, but assuming that's a lot more convenient than having to go into the toilet and getting urine on your hands and stuff like that. You know, it's, I mean, with all you have to do is rub it in your mouth, inside your mouth. It's, that's the way forward, isn't it? Surely. I don't know if they're the only one out there with this. Are they or not?
I assume they work. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to sell them. So you know, it's a good deal because, again, we spoke last week about Novoscience and Amiga Diagnostics and, you know, all those companies that were big in COVID testing now having to find, you know, new revenue streams. So you know, what you've seen here is, you know, again, that sort of realization that COVID wasn't going to stick around forever. Although, you know, COVID is around. I know several people have come down with it recently. So that, you know, there is still a market for COVID testing, although not quite as big as the one that it was before when the government was paying for them all. But these companies have to find, you know, new applications, and so it's, you know, it's good to see that progress. It's good to see them, you know, finding a new path.
This was their interim results, by the way. Abingdon Health. They are about 30 million market cap. In a trading update there. They say revenue is expected to be 4 million, 42% higher. So is that for the year? Yeah, so still, it's not, I don't think
it's decent growth. It's decent growth.
Yeah, they're 3.2 million of cash. But still, that's what, three times revenue sales? It's not cheap, really. And I'm going to say losing the interims. It's not particularly cheap. A reduction in adjusted EBITDA loss of 2.2. They are loss making, and so yeah.
You would assume that as they grow their top line, you know, a lot of that will fall through. There has to be an operational gearing effect there. You would think from looking at, you know, very very quickly looking at the relationship between sales and profit. So you know. If they can sell more of these tests and find new applications for what they do or new partners to sell their products, then yeah, you would hope that they get back to that, you know, net neutral position fairly soon.
Yeah. Okay. Just on my sort of how I look at stocks on a technical basis. If you look at the 50-day moving average crossing that, look, and then when it break a previous high, so previous high is pretty much up here, and so. You know, broke up there. So you bought that at 7.23. They got up to there 15, maybe a double. Mm. Nice double there. And then maybe put a stop loss in because it's a bit volatile. Interesting to see where it goes from here, though, because there's gaps up like that. Sometimes it's not sustainable. But, that's good. The Tesco is a big market. So, I'd like to know, what's the competition in the market for spit sticks, you know, for pregnancy tests? Are they exclusive, or there must be other people doing this, surely?
Well, you mean you've got the traditional ones. Maybe people were more comfortable with the traditional ones. Doesn't mean, you know, just because there is a new product that everyone will use it.
Well, I wouldn't prefer to do that. Would you prefer to use a stick or spit in the stick?
No comment.
No, I think definitely rubbing it on the inside of your cheek, and I'm talking about mouth cheek.
No more detail on this.
Is more preferable than to go in the toilet and try to, you know, win it. Yeah. By the way, okay, let's look at the front page of Vox here. Let's see what's happening. There's quite a bit of news out here. So, InStem, what do they do, John?
Picks and shovels for the farm industry. So basically, they're a software platform that helps. Or they provide a software platform that helps big pharma groups manage their drug development pipelines.
Yeah,
you know, there's a lot going on in getting drugs to the market. A lot of data, a lot of things, you know, information process that needs to be managed. So having good tech platforms to do that is very, very, very important. And this is the sort of business where you can imagine, you know, the impacts of AI will help them. You know, it's about algorithmic type stuff, and you know, they already work with lots of big you know, pharma groups, in fact, most of the big pharma groups, you know, it sort of has the feel of an industry standard, this product. So yeah, it's quite a nice company.
Yeah.
I must admit, I hadn't really noticed it before. But as you know, I'm always on the lookout for picks and shovels. About 140 million market cap, I think.
Yeah, it's downtrend in the chart there. Rob from Norwich says, with M&S, I wonder now, with so much competition eliminated, but a card factory we're talking about, you know, the competition is gone by the wayside, such as Debenhams, if there's a better outlook for the clothing, I will admit that after I hit 40, I did feel more comfortable going in there. yeah, exactly. You're in the club now. Welcome in there. But I you know, the food is cracking actually. And I only know that. But my wife's mother buys a lot of it and gives us some of it. So otherwise we wouldn't shop there. But yeah.
The other big retailer, obviously, just to finish that little observation about Marks & Spencer is next. Their numbers have been good recently. Yeah. Upgrade cycle. So that point about the last man standing, the removal of competition for the market. I actually think that's true. Remember, of course, as well, that the cost of living crisis has affected certain demographic groups more than others.
People with no mortgages are in the M&S more likely to be in M&S shoppers.
Precisely. Mm. So you sort of start seeing how the macro can feed through to business performance. That must have been a factor.
Yeah. News here, Atlantic Secure's partner to kickstart byproduct development. This is quite interesting.
It
is one of the most read because I don't think so. When I talked to Neil, I've not heard him mention Feldspar.
They did mention it in their last update.
Did they?
So this is kind of a rapid development from there. So this is basically a mineral that is a byproduct of the sort of spodumene, the kind of lithium ore. That has potential uses, and in this case, they're potentially going to use this mineral and other minerals that are byproducts, quartz being one of them, to try and sort of breathe some life into Ghana's ceramic industry. So this is potentially useful. It potentially lowers the costs of the extraction process, of the lithium extraction process. But the thing I think it does is it sort of really does, it means there's less waste product, but it's also supporting another indigenous Ghanaian industry, ceramics. Mm-hmm. So this sort of puts a few ticks in the boxes of the ESG criteria. And you would hope, given we are seeing sort of some fears around, the future of mining in certain African jurisdictions. And there was some chatter around this, which has affected the share price. It positions them as a good partner for the Ghanaian government. And I think they were planning this anyway, but I think this helps.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to know the metrics around this, but Keith there says that, Keith and Neil, see, they're proper names, aren't they? The commercialization of Feldspar at Awoya! Offers the potential. I don't know why I have to say that. I feel like I should sit there. A warrior offers potential to generate significant. There's that word again. Value to Ghana, in addition to the prospects of product lithium production. So yeah, be interesting to see the numbers on that.
You won't see them for a while, I suspect, because this is very much a new thing. But directionally, this is a good thing. A good thing for Atlantic.
I tell you who we had a request from yesterday was Gaming Realms and GMR. I didn't quite catch sticker when I first there. But what's your thoughts on it? Have you looked at Gaming Realms at all, John?
I had a quick peek on the back of the request. And, it's a steady grower. It's really, if you're just looking at the numbers, turnover's rising, profits are rising, growing very quickly, valued relatively cheaply against the rate of that growth. I don't like companies in this sector. And when I say this sector, gambling, it's very much a personal choice, but, I don't touch stuff that's related to the gambling industry.
Mark Blandford, the non-exec, is buying a bit of stock. He bought quite a few. He owns 4.3% of the company. He bought some here. So who else has been buying? Is that Mark Blandford? That's the share option scheme. But what I did look at the pre-close trading update here a while back. The police confirmed that expects to report H1 2023 revenue of 11.4. And I thought, hang on, what's the market cap. Okay, so it's about 5x sales. I suppose that's you know, again, not cheap.
But it doesn't look cheap on that basis, but profits are growing really quickly.
Yeah, EBITDA for what? So let's say the 10 million of EBITDA, that's 10 times EBITDA. That's not too bad, I suppose. If they're growing very quickly, that's not too bad. That's obviously decent margins there. But yeah, they're going. They are growing very quickly.
Yeah, I just don't like gambling. I mean, you know, that's for two reasons. One is it's the sort of personal reason. I don't gamble.
Yeah.
I think it's a fairly insidious industry. I just don't like it. But secondly,
well, investing is gambling, really. Look at this.
It's not. It is. But secondly, you know, I just remember maybe, you know, many years ago, you saw a big rush into North America. Because, you know, gaming had been, and it's called gambling. What do we call it? Gaming. It's gambling.
Exactly. So they don't like the term.
No, they don't like telling it what it really is. But you know, so you had this big rush into sort of a newly, you know, legislated gaming market in the US, and then it all sort of turned on a sixpence, and they changed their minds, and you know, you ended up seeing you know, UK executives being sort of extradited, for want of a better word. I think maybe even one of them was. I can't remember. So yeah, they got the rug pulled. From underneath the industry, and now a lot of them are targeting growth in the US again.
Yeah, you've got to be careful of highly regulated, you know, areas, because like I said, it can change, and all of a sudden, your revenue company could halve overnight. It depends where you are.
There was a chap called Barney Frank. He was a US politician who basically did that.
That's right. Yeah, that's quite. Look at the chart there. You see, the Golden Cross happened here nicely, and then you got high dipped. It's quite a volatile, but you can see high lows there, high lows, and they're breaking out there. It's been interesting to get above that. It's trying to get towards those highs again, but who knows? It was one other TMTV.
Yeah, TMT.
Do you know what they are? The investment company.
It's an investment company, essentially. Yeah, I mean, it's
investing.
Small tech companies, both private and public. So they've got a big holding in a Nasdaq company called Backblaze, which I had a look at. I mean, you can buy these shares for half of what their net asset value per share is.
Yeah, many investment companies at the moment are like that. Many of them.
Not, you know, to that extent. You know,
I think IPO is, which is quite a good, you know, one of the big sort of companies that invest in all the sort of start tech. I mean, if you look at this, IPO is very similar, and growth is another one. Look at that. Very similar chart.
Yeah.
And grow, I think, is another one. They're all into these sort of, you know, investment companies into the high tech.
Or tech capital is the other one.
But these are big companies. And so you can see the charts very soon. The issue is, isn't it? The cost of capital has gone up. Like I say, you can't miss, it's very hard now to misallocate capital. When cash was free and easy flowing and cheap, they'd invest in everything and they could get lots of money for these startup companies. But now it's gone the exact opposite way. And so that's why it's taken a massive knock. So until the liquidity comes back in the market, they won't rise again, these companies. You know?
That's exactly what TMC say in their statement. You know, you're seeing a divergence, an increase in divergence between the stronger and weaker performers. So, you know, companies that are already performing strongly, that you know, perhaps have more developed, are finding it easier to raise new capital than those that aren't. So this would make sense if you look at, you know, the sort of proliferation of tech that we saw during the boom. You know, the explosion of the unicorns, you know, it was absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah.
You know, it went from virtually, you know, no billion-dollar privately owned companies to hundreds and hundreds. They seem to, you know, there was a niche for everything. So I think the other worry, you know, so investment trust discounts are broad generally, or are certainly wider than the historic average. But these companies that are investing in the racier end of it, the discounts are, you know, extreme.
But you also say, you know, again, be careful. You know, how do they, valuations of these companies, what are you basing them on? Because they were valued a lot higher when liquidity and money was around and freely available.
Well, that's right.
So it's almost questionable. NAVs are very questionable sometimes. It's hard. That's why, you know, it's a
100%. Anyway, that is exactly why the discount exists. However, you know, you have to look at the basis upon which companies like TMT value the companies within their portfolio. So, you know, you have to do a bit of digging to really see. Yeah. You know, the extent to which the discount is justified.
Yeah, and they will be, obviously, because normally the valuations are based off their last fundraise. And, of course, the last fundraise is a lot higher. And, of course, because now they're not going to get away as much of a valuation, or they're not going to even raise money at certain valuations. So, you know, a lot of them have to discount. By the way, is John trying to reinvent himself with the snazzy shirt, the Madonna, the Madonna of the financial world? Yeah. And Jedi said, no, that's an M&S shirt. That'd be brilliant. Is that an M&S shirt, John? Admit it. They are looking at...
It's Ted Baker.
Oh, I say, it's Ted Baker, yes.
I've had it for years.
You wouldn't catch me dead in M&S, my friend. Any comments on recent listed cab payments holdings? I did see this. Are you aware of cab payments holdings?
No. Let's come back to that one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, have a look at that. But that's a cab. I did see this somewhere, cab payments. They are 642.
Right,
there is a holding company for Crown Agents Bank, the main operating company that is trusted payments processing FX brands. Is a market leader in business-to-business, cross-border payments and foreign exchange, specializing in hard-to-reach markets. I see a lot of this at the moment. There's a lot of this going on. In the space, you've got Argentex, you've got sort of Equals or sort of similar. There's Cornerstone, which is a lot smaller. And in fact, today, what is about one of the most read is GS Technologies, and they've got this, they've acquired this PayPT Finance Limited from Canada, and they're talking about now they can do service all our B2B customers. We don't start onboarding customers. I was saying next generation of digital money solutions, and I said, well, hang on a second, feeling caught up in this digital side of it. We've had digital payments, digital cross-border payments for years. You know, when you get paid, for example, if you buy something from Amazon or anything or whatever, you don't use real cash. It's digital. Everything's digital. Every payment you make these days is digital. Unless you actually hand over cash to someone, it's all digital. I don't see the big hoo-ha about digital payments and Bitcoin will solve digital payments. No, it won't. Bitcoin will solve that because it's too volatile. And we already do digital payments. So what's the big deal? I don't understand it.
Cross-border stuff's a bit more tricky.
Don't need crypto for that, though. There's all these crypto cross-border payments. First of all, crypto is not going to do it because it's too volatile. We've had sort of cross-border payments for a long time. It's not that hard. It's all right. It's a big deal.
Yeah. No, absolutely. No, it is quite interesting. That deal gives them a banking license, which means they can offer more services to more people. It is quite interesting. By the way, I've just realised my laptop isn't plugged in, so if I disappear off screen, that's why.
Okay, well, we're nearly towards the end. Just look at this couple of winners here. ESP, the only news on that is a seller. I think one of the original holders, Teller Partners, or one of the big holders, have reduced to nothing. So you've got that, you know, like I said, sometimes a share price can rise, not on buying, but the lack of selling. Once the selling dries up, even a couple of buys will push it higher. So that can happen sometimes.
But it's overhang. It's yeah, you know, they put it stock overhang.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's all about, I mean, look what's happened here because of that. You know, he stopped selling a couple of days ago. So no news on that really. But one of the risers were today. There was they're buying back. I don't understand this company. They're buying back shares, right? I don't understand where they are, but they got $200,000 worth. I think share. You're a tiddler. Why are you buying back shares? I don't understand. You should conserve that money to develop the business, surely.
Well, how much money have they got? I mean, that's the question. You know,
Abingdon Health there, Veritech. They obviously into solar panels, but they've done a non-exec memorandum of understanding that forms the basis of framework to invest in new large-scale ultra-lightweight solar panel manufacturing plant in southern Italy. It's been having a bit of a problem with that for a while, with finances and all that stuff.
But, well, it's been tricky. Producing solar panels in Europe has been tricky. You had a fairly large solar manufacturing industry. It was Germany. Germany was a really strong market. That industry was hit because basically, you know, China is dumping, they call it. So basically China was selling Chinese-made solar panels into Europe at below cost. There are geopolitical situations that are now occurring that mean reshoring production of things like solar panel from places like China is massively important. So if, you know, we can develop a revitalize the indigenous solar manufacturing industry that we once had in Europe, then that's great news. We might find it easy to get their financing in the current political environment.
Yeah. By the way, this is CAB's chart since they IPO'd. Not pretty. That's not at 330, they're at 255. So, and Vertec, it's come off the bottom there, Vertec. But still not, well, impact, it has, it's from 0.4 to 170. You realize that from the bottom, those technical bounces from the bottom, you can multi-bag on those. It's like, you know, but where's the bottom? That's the trouble, you know? Mm. If you start scaling in, you could be scaling for a long time in a downtrend. But it's come back to one pence there, a little bit of gap up and down. But anything else to catch your eye, John, on the front page or anything at all?
That's good. UP Global Sourcing, I've been having a little look at this morning. I haven't written anything up yet. But it's a company we mentioned a while back on our sock screening podcast. Okay. It owns homeware brands, Salter being the most well-known. Really strong results. They've basically sort of restructured this business to be more online focused, improving the sales mix, and you know, it's really paying off. Some, you know, very, very well targeted investment in sort of marketing and branding, PGS, that sort of stuff. Yeah, nice company.
Okay, nice company. They've had a little rally, they've come back a bit, it's fine. Cool. All right then. Let's just have a quick look at the final look on the chart. Oh, by the way, just quickly like I said, fundamentally, on the macro side, some interesting news here. Like I said, wage growth here. By the way, this is very important, I think. It almost more important than the wage growth, because this is showing now the price of milk and sunflower oil is starting to come down. And so they're starting to see, Kantar said the shop was paid £1.50 on average, £4, and milk down from £1.69. So it's going in the right direction. Don't forget, tomorrow...
You say that. I mean, I'm going to throw something out there. And I was speaking this morning to a credit investor. Mm. So they invest in corporate bonds, and particularly sub-investment grade corporate bonds. Mm. And, you know, they interpret this news, the news from the UK on wages, as bad news.
The bad news.
Yeah,
but it'll drag there, because what you've got, first of all, it's a lagging indicator, but what you've also got is unemployment's gone up. So that's ticked up.
Well, that's the balancing act. So, you know, the higher the unemployment, the less likely companies are, or, you know, wage demands are to be met.
But everything's focused on the wage growth, which is, I mean, you know, so you may be, you know, if you get, what's the wage growth going up by? 7.8. Now, if inflation ticks down below that, then you're obviously getting a real-time sort of pay rise, which it hasn't been. But the thing is, if the UK labour market is easing up a bit, then those wage increases won't continue to happen. And if inflation comes down, they won't continue to happen, because you can't keep saying, you're going to get 8%, you know, when inflation is at 6.8%. So I think this is good. But I mean, anyway,
I guess the point that this chap was making, and, you know, and it's important, is, you know, credit managers, you know, inflation and interest rates are all important. You know, they set the benchmarks by which these companies can generate their risk adjusted returns. And you know, he said they cannot call at the moment definitively where they think inflation is going to be. Because you have data like this. We had oil and gas prices coming off quite strongly over the year, but they've started to tick up again.
Yeah.
So you know, all he said, and I would urge everyone to consider this, is that it's not over until the fat lady sings when it comes to inflation, basically.
Yeah, but she won't be as fat. She can't afford to buy as much food. But in fact, the bond market didn't like today. It didn't like the wages going up, because look at that. That's gone up to above 15. It was dipping down below 15 moving average. Now it's dipped up above that. That's the previous all-time high, 5.5. And so it has gone up. But that's reacted to the wage figures rather than the food figures.
Yeah.
So anyway, wages out. This is quite worrying. China has stopped releasing youth unemployment figures. They're so bad, pretty much. They've stopped releasing them. Oh, that's transparent, China. Because they're so bad, we're not going to release them anymore. It's like, hopefully people ignore them. But that's nuts,
I was,
isn't it?
I was reading today they've stopped. I mean, this is one of the government statistics that it stopped releasing. It's stopped releasing thousands of government statistics in the past few years. I mean, you know, and this again is worrying because China is such an important cog in the global machine, and we don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of people on Twitter. John's gone. I'll finish off. A couple of people on Twitter saying China is panicking. They're reducing the interest rate, the policy rate. Anyway, John's not plugged in. He's gone. His battery's gone. Right, Jedi, thanks for that. Any comments on it? Well, we'll get that tomorrow. And Equals has been a good investment for me. Yeah, done very well. They're called the Fairfax. And I know Equals very well. I've been preloaded their cards. Thank you very much for all the comments. By all means, listen, if you haven't hit that subscribe button, please do it. Because we're going for a week on holidays. And if those numbers aren't up, we're not coming back. But if you enjoy this, hit that subscribe button, please. And could you look at East India? Wants to be new. We did look at the IESB just then. That's what the ticker is. But we'll look at that tomorrow. Thanks very much. I'm running out of time. And speak tomorrow. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.